When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm listening to the House of Indie.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the House of Indie. My name is Joey Galvez, and I have an amazing creator here. I have an independent creator who just within this last week that we are recording, got picked up by Scout. And this is another, and I'm going to butcher your name, Adrian Kolarik, right?
Cleric.
See, I already messed it up. But welcome, okay. Adrian, to the show, creator of Tracovi, right?
Yes.
How's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
I'm absolutely sorry for butchering your names. I am notorious for doing that, man.
Honestly, it's not a problem. Like I my first name is spelled so wonky that it's honestly been a lifelong thing. My mother still, when she sends me birthday cards, spells my name wrong.
She's the one that chose the spelling.
This is just water off a duck's ass. So, yeah.
Oh man, that's hilarious. So let's talk a little bit about Tracovi, man. I heard about this obviously because you got picked up by Scout. And I read this book and I was like, dude, this artwork is awesome. Listen, I got to talk to you about the artwork. If I'm reading a book in bed next to my wife, who in number one hates comic books, right? And she looks over and she says, "Oh, well, that's cool artwork," and says nothing else for the remainder of the night. I think you hit this one out of the park.
This has been a weird thing, you know, because like it's just how I draw, right? And I didn't expect anyone to actually read the book, so you know, to be at this point is still absolutely shocking to me. And the podcast I've been on and you know, the comments on social media and all that, it's always been like a lot of it geared towards the artwork, which is kind of funny because I just how I draw. I can't do corporate art, you know. I'm not gonna be doing the Daredevil run or anything, you know, in my lifetime kind of thing. But
this would be really cool to see Daredevil in this style of artwork. So tell me a little bit. So what would you call your style of artwork? If you gave it a name.
self-taught. It's just self-taught. I really don't have, I'm horrible with giving labels or describing anything art related. I'm awful with, like, people ask me like certain questions in regards to art. I'm like, I don't know. My knowledge is so, when it comes to art history .
Well, what was cool about it is, and this might blow your socks off a little bit here. When I was looking through the artwork, it's not exactly the same as this artist. This creator, but it reminded me of Stefano Cardicelli's type of stuff. It was very, very a lot. If we were to group these two books together, they would probably be in the same kind of, you know, family. And I don't know if you've seen his artwork, and it's very, very similar to kind of what you do here. And people are loving that kind of stuff. They love this chaotic style artwork lately. And I got to tell you, I used to not like it. I used to be one of those guys that was like, I don't know. I have to be convinced.
Right? Yeah, especially with comic books, right? I know for me, like, and I'm not picking on this title, but like the Department of Truth. You know, I jumped into it right away because I love growing up kid in the 80s or whatever, like California punk and Dead Kennedys. We always like the Ronald Reagan motif, and the whole gig posters and stuff. Like, there you go. To see this Department of Truth and like the whole where I'm like, this is exactly what I want. But I found, I added to my profile, the more I read each issue, the harder it became to read, I guess. I found like the artwork is beautiful. But it was almost too chaotic to focus enough on the story. So I was a little, I guess that's why when I, started doing the book, a lot of doubt, right? Because it's like, you always think you should be drawing a particular way, right? You look at Marvel and DC, and again, too, somebody coined it, like I said, corporate illustration, and it just stuck in my head, right? Like the last few months, right? And it's like, I knew I could not reach that level of accuracy and all that. It took a little bit to kind of finally decide, well, I'll just do what I do and then figure it out later.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this book before we get into like the nitty gritty of that stuff, because I really do want to get into the creative process. Give me a quick log line of Trakovi really quick for the people who haven't read it yet.
So Trakovi is a story of a Slovenian thug taking light contract work in the northern Canadian city of Edmonton, which is where I am. So it's a real city. And basically the story kicks off a botched heist that results in a school bus explosion. And then basically Trakovi's world just slowly unravels at that point.
And that's exactly what happens here. I was actually able to read the first two issues. At first, I was like, what the heck is going on here? But once you get into the story a little bit more, you kind of get this feel as you develop the characters. And literally, I got to tell you, by the end of the first issue, I was wanting to peel open. And I told myself, I'm just going to read issue one just to kind of familiarize myself a little bit. I read issue two and I couldn't get enough.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. Cause like, I did a self-published run, cause I ran a Kickstarter. And so, I printed off a couple hundred copies. In Edmonton, I'm set up at a few shops and, really like every shop is like, well, the people that came in and grabbed issue one came back like the next day for issue two. Right. So which is good. And because like they were both written at the same time. Right. It was actually supposed to be like one like jumbo size debut, I guess. But there was just a natural cutoff that was able to split it up into two issues.
Yeah. And it's really cool because the story at first, I got it. I'm going to tell you the truth here. When I first read this, I was like, oh, this is really brutal. And I'm reading this right before bedtime. And then I was just, but like you said, I got into it and I couldn't get enough. I wanted some more. So how many issues is this going to run for?
Okay. So, so we determined that's going to be five issues for this particular story arc, which is called Blind Faith. And then we'll see after that. I know my editor that's got assigned to me, just that he basically asked us if we can draw any more stories past this storyline. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So, I'll take it. But no, yeah. So like I said, right now it's five issues.
Can we expect some redemption for Trakovi?
I don't think so. I don't know. Listen, to be honest. So like I have, I'm well into issue three and then I have notes for issue four and five. Cause I don't really work. I don't do my scripts, formally from start to finish. So basically I just kind of have notes and then I know exactly where certain people are going to end up. Except for Trakovi himself, I'm still kind of working out his play in this storyline.
I was reading an article and that they I think it was like the local newspaper or something like that wrote on you when you were talking about these books and they came out and they talked a little bit about how you literally put your hometown into this story, man. So tell me a little bit about that.
When I started the comic about two and a half years ago, a lot of research, but you know what I mean? You start reading everything. You start reading about how people go about things and all that, and you know, like the how to's and, you know, this one person had this, you know, whole thing about world building and, you know, draw a map of the world that your comic is going to be, you know, situated. And it just didn't interest me at all. And I came across an article with Sarah Jessica Parker, of all people, and she's discussing, you know, Sex in the City. And she was commenting how it's just a mention of how the city of New York was the fifth character, you know, in the series. And I thought, well, that's, yeah, you know, I watched Sex and the City, actually, you know what I mean? Like, so like, hey, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm a fan. The movies are terrible and the current show is absolutely atrocious, but you know, we were big fans of the
I swear I was not going to ask you about, and what's it called? And then there's that or whatever it's called.
It's so bad. I can't remember it now. And just like that.
That's right? What it calls. And what a what a horrible title for show number one.
Oh, it's just, you know, we're listen, I'm not like, you know, just because I got like two books, whatever, in the can, you know, I'm not an expert on writing, but my Lord, the writing, after each episode, I go to my wife, I'm like, how did this get signed off? It's just,
we know, anyway, we know exactly anyway. Why green.
Anyway, yeah.
That's why.
So, anyway, so it just right away just dawned on me that, you know what? Let's keep it local. Let's use a background, a world that I know. And also too, it's like, you know, in my head, I'm like, this book is never going to get past Edmonton city limits, right? So I'm just going to focus on the local, make a couple of copies, and then that's it. You know, almost treat like you know, like a zine, right? And so yeah, so I had my certain spots that, you know, that I frequent and you know, I'm very familiar with, and then just went from there. And it just kind of helps makes it a little more authentic. And also too, I like to involve people that follow me, right? So like I post a lot of like work in progress and, you know, to have their environment included in the book, you know, especially local, right? Because you always, like, for me, it's like I always find you want to try to like build up, you know, your most, I guess, fan base or support, you know, where you are, right, in your hometown. And and like I said, people just kind of latched onto it and got excited about it because, you know, they can see themselves, you know, in front of this place. It's almost like a novelty now. Like, you know, we're joking about how, you know, if this book ever gets to a certain point, you know, we can have Trakovi tours. You know, we'll just rent a bus like in, you know, Big Trouble Little China, and then we'll just kind of hit up all these spots and, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm all about that all day long. So, let me talk to you a little bit. So have you been able to do the con circuit yet?
No.
Cuz I know you've hit up an expo out there, right?
You know what? And that's where the book actually really started, was the Edmonton Expo in 2019, and that was actually my first con that I did. Cuz I would do, like, you know, like as an artist and that, like I did, you know, a lot of like markets and stuff like that with prints and, you know, so I took my prints, it was like fan art. Right. You know, but it was like, you know, known, heroes and villains in everyday, setups, like, you know, Dr. Doom making a sandwich or Galactus pouring a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? Just like, you know, kitschy stuff. Right. So anyway, so I went to the Edmonton Expo thinking I would have a pretty good weekend. And it was like the slowest weekend I've ever had. You know, I was getting absolutely blown away by this girl who was selling, you know, manga arts. And across from me was a guy who was selling handmade coffee mugs. And he was having an amazing weekend. And it was just like, you know, tumbleweeds on my side. So yeah, so anyway, so I just, I took the time and I just, I started writing the first draft.
You would have never thought mugs would have been selling you out, dude.
I was sitting like kind of in the middle of the aisle with a bunch of other artists, and everyone's like, "Well, how's your weekend?" And everyone's like, "This is like the worst weekend of my life." I'm like, "Go check out my neighbor." And so this guy's got like this little lineup going for these mugs, and it was just.
That's crazy. Anyway, so did you take some notes of his salesmanship?
I based one of the main characters off him. His name is Jim.
Awesome.
And Jim was a former pastor in Minnesota, I believe. So yeah. So he's in
that's,
the book.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I love that. That's where the origin of Jim came from. Okay, so let's take a small break here. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about the creative process. We'll get into a little bit more of the characters because you have some crazy, wacky characters in here. And I want to open up the door to talking to those about those guys. So when we come back, we'll talk to Adrian a little bit more.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of MetaHuman Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first six issues in a collected hardcover volume one. All you got to do is head on over to kickstarter.com and type in the Department of MetaHuman Affairs or DMA and check it out right now.
And welcome back to the show. I'm still here with my buddy, Adrian. And I'm going to call you my buddy because I feel like we've been talking for a little bit. And I think we're having a good time. So, so how's it going, man? Let's talk a little bit about the characters. You before the break, you did talk about how you based Pastor Jim off of the guy who sold you out at a con. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Jim, he was just an absolute character. So Jim being, he was just a pastor, a former pastor, who I guess adopted like a dozen kids and was just like, you know, just like was the nicest guy ever. And, as he was like, you know, in between breaks of like, you know, selling like, you know, about 30 mugs, I would kind of chat him up. And then, you know, we got to a point where it's like, I'm like, you're going to be in my book. And then as it kind of went further, I got more comfortable. I'm like, I'm going to put you like in cutoff jeans, you know, just high, whatever jeans. I'm laying out this whole story at him. And it was almost like a little bit of revenge on my end, because here this guy was just absolutely cleaning up. So his son was there and I was explaining the story to his son and he was just dying. Like, you know, Jim was a big catalyst in really getting the story going.
That's absolutely hilarious because I don't know if you want to explain what Jim looks like if to those people who are listening who have not been able to see the book yet.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted him to be was just this this kind man, right? You know, and I Jim has quite the story arc. I think you read chapter two, right?
Yes, I did.
So you kind of see where Jim is, is developing, right? So, he's actually a pretty big character. I wanted to have him start out, you know, as just that kind moral compass, you know, like just that foundation, in Chekhov's life. You wanted to like, you know, I wanted to develop like sympathy for the character, basically just a relationship, with him. So if anything happens to him or whatnot, you know, there's a little bit more of an impact,
Is any of your other characters based off of anybody in real life?
Yeah. So Chekhov's based, on my loosely off my grandfather, who's a Slovenian immigrant, and then a kind of like a smattering of like other like I grew up with my grandparents who are both Slovenian immigrants, and so growing up, we call ourselves Yugoslavians, right? You know, until like the war, you know, and all that. So I still kind of refer to myself as Yugoslavian. So anyway, so I was within that community of like, you know, Serbians, Croatians, you know, we had, it was an Eastern Bloc basically, you know, in our neighborhood. And so, so Trakovi is sort of like, just a combination of just like a group of people.
Oh. Hilarious, because I knew a couple of guys like that. Like not super because I feel like Trakovi's like over the top, but his demeanor, his character, definitely you know, feels a lot like a handful of guys that I knew back in the day.
Well, you know, and the challenge too right now is I'm finding is I think people right away assume, you know, that, you know, he's like a Russian character, right? Like they look at the name and they kind of like, you know, some of like, you know, the quintessential, you know, whatever, Rusky, right? So, you know, they think, you know, there's going to be this whole vodka thing. He's going to say, bro, like tracksuit mafia, you know, and that kind of thing. But, but I'm hoping like, you know, once people kind of read and all that, you know, they'll kind of get a sense that it's not that stereotypical, whatever, like a clear alcohol kind of thing. Right. So, smokes a lot. But you know, that's a European thing, right? And then his dialogue too. A lot of his dialogue is really based off real life dialogue that I grew up with, you know. So and the thing too, if you noticed, is he basically speaks Slovenian throughout the whole, well, the first two issues, right? A smattering of like, you know, broken English and all that, but yeah, yeah, it's right off the bat. Everything he says is translated from Slovenian. And the funny thing is like everybody in the book that interacts with him just goes with it, you know? So there's no, so, and somebody asked me on another show, it's like, well, how do people understand him, you know, if he's just speaking Slovenian? And I said, well, it's actually a nod to Ocean's 11, actually the Ocean series, the George Clooney versions, where they have the Asian character. And he speaks I don't know if it's Mandarin or Cantonese, and they just go with it. They just go with it. He'll have this whole dialogue in this language, and Brad Pitt's like, okay, yeah, but you know, and he replies back like it's, you know, like was in on it. So yeah.
I love it because when I was reading it and it's very clear because when you are reading his words when he's speaking in his language, it's clear, precise, and you know exactly what he's saying. But when he goes into broken English, it's very much broken English, and you could tell. I love the way you even wrote him have an accent, and it definitely gives me that difference and that difference in feel. And something just so simple like that is very powerful in a book like that, because and I feel like a lot of it is, you know, simplifying your story and sometimes you kind of overdo it. So how did you kind of do that? Did you simple, like how crazy was it before, and how many times did you have to simplify the story?
It took a couple of drafts. Yeah. I had a friend here, kind of help me through that. Just kind of like read and sort of ask a lot of questions, like why is so-and-so doing this? Why is so-and-so doing that? And then, you know, kind of once I figured that out, then it was like the dialogue thing. I was really trying to figure out how to do this. Right. And, again, too, just research, just kind of seeing what other people did. And then, but yeah, trying to jump from like the, you know, the well-articulated Slovenian to the broken English, that was more so just kind of like playing off of, you know, just like, again, the people I grew up with. Right. Like, you know, our neighbor would, like, he would speak like so eloquently, you know, in his Serbian dialect. And then you go into English and it was just like, you know, boom, 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 you know, there's sort of like a choppy, whatever. Right. So yeah. Yeah. It took basically just drawing back on past, experiences.
And I love that you, explained it in a sound because that's that. And I got it perfectly. I know exactly what you were talking about because I felt it, but did you have these characters always in your head, you know, for the longest time, and then you had to finally get it on the page? Or how did this, I guess what I'm asking is, how did this come about?
Yeah. So, so this goes back to when I was doing these markets, you know, and I would be drawing like fan art and stuff like that. So one of the characters I had drawn was was kind of like this chubby, you know, chubby Yugoslavian guy with mustache and, you know, the red tracksuit. And then he had a Spider-Man mask on, but he wore like a toque. Anyway, so I call him. His name was Peter Petrovich. So I did a little bit of, you know, art, you know, a little fan art with this fictional character, Peter Petrovich. And anyway, so I needed an antagonist for Peter. And so I was really into collecting old Strange Tales books. And I'm always fascinated by like the classic Hydra outfits. You know, so I'm like, well, I need a Hydra agent, you know, my own Hydra guy, right? And so I drew, you know, so I drew Peter like in the classic Spider-Man swinging pose, and I was going to have somebody underneath his arm. And so I drew this thug, which happened to be, you know, Chakovey. And he was like my thug. And so then I was kind of thinking like, you know, about writing a book, and I was actually going to do a book on Peter. So it was going to be Peter Petrovich, right? But I just ended up, I kind of like the look of Chakovey. I thought, you know, it'd be a fun cosplay. And then, yeah. And so he was really the starting point. And it was like trying to find the name was the biggest thing. Right. So, so like I said, this is 2019, like in the summer. And so, again, too, was just trying to avoid like the whole Russian thing, you know, and that. And so I just started looking into like just some Slovenian. I Google translated a whole bunch of like words, from English to Slovenian. And then, so Chakovey, is Slovenian for, like tape or ribbon, which it basically refers to like a piece of fabric that, that tailors use to add like stripes, like on clothing. So it worked out great because he had the stripes and all that. So, so that's where his name came from. And then once I established that he was going to be the main character, then it was just like, I just kind of added as I went, you know, meeting people like Jim, and then, you know, from Jim, then it's just like, just basically like, it's almost just like cooking, right? Just kind of slowly an ingredient here and there. And then, you know, yeah, people start showing up.
Such a perfect analogy about creating comic books, because it is. And everybody has a different recipe for the same dish, right? And it doesn't mean that that one person can do it one way and another person could do it another way. And it's beautiful both ways. And I love that.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned that. Like, and I'm looking forward to, like, it's funny now. It's like, you know, I'm at the point now where it's like, I'm getting people asking questions on how the process works, right? Which is funny because like 2 years ago, I was like asking like a couple of guys that I follow questions, right? Because I was so obsessed when I started, and when I was getting to the point where I was ready to start drawing this out properly and all that, I was so obsessed with like how the process works, right? You know what I mean? Like how the pages were laid out, how they'd be scanned, how they'd be colored and so forth, right? And so, you know, so I kind of read, basically I was looking into how to videos really. And then, you know, so I would buy like the pads of, you know, like the large pads that had like the layouts, like the bleed lines and all that. And I'm like, well, then I got to get some blue pencils, right? You know what I mean? So I'm trying to draw everything all nice, you know, cause I'm seeing these guys selling these pages at Comic Cons and all that. Right. And my God, it was just like absolute torture. I like to, you know, it's probably the fine artist to me, you know, I need a little more freedom. And, you know, and then, you know, I just like ended up, scrapping that and just drawing things just on rough pieces of paper, like just recycled photocopy paper, scanning it into Photoshop and then moving everything around and then laying everything out, in that way. So, but anyway, for anyone that's starting out or whatever, it's like, no way is the right way. That's one thing I've learned. You know what I mean? So if you have a certain way that works for you, then just have at her, you know? Cause like at the end, you know, like, you know, we all reach that look at the ends, like, you know, the end product, but how you get there, I don't care.
Yeah. And I love that you say that you tried it the traditional ways first. And I think that's key sometimes, because, you know, if you're starting out, listen, I started this show because I wanted to get a little bit of insight into how to create a comic book, because maybe eventually I wanted to create a comic book. Right. And so I've got these stories in my head, and And I've been trying to talk to a lot of handful of people like you did to reach out to guys and stuff to help me out. And they're like, oh yeah, do this, do that. And I'm like, and I try it. I'm like, I just can't, it just doesn't fit in with me and my process. And, yeah. And I'm still trying to figure out where that process lays that is going to fit with me. And it's absolutely, crazy sometimes. But I love that you said that you tried the traditional ways first and then you figured out your own way. And I feel like that's the sometimes a lot of us go through it that way. You know, you try the traditional ways and then you go and you figure out your own way and you still come to the same conclusion. And I love it.
Yeah. And you know, and I think that actually like deters people from going further with their project, which is sad because there's probably books and stories out there that we'll probably never see. That are, I'm sure, brilliant, you know, but unfortunately, like, you know, like creatives can be pretty sensitive, you know, it doesn't take much to knock us down. And, you know, some people, you can easily get discouraged, you know, but like I said, as soon as you find your comfort zone and realize that it's okay, that's all I got to know. Whatever you do, it's okay. Just as long as it looks like a comic book at the end of the day, have at it.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it can be a little sad because there could be stories out there that people are sitting on that aren't going to the page yet because they're just, you know, overwhelmed or it's get out there and do it. Right. Find your own process. And I love that.
You don't know where it's going to end up. Honestly, it's just do it. Do it because you want to do it. And then if it ends up somewhere, great. If it doesn't, great. You know, at least you did it, right?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Like, I mean, when I started this, I've always wanted to do a comic. Like, I mean, I did one in grade 9 for an English assignment, you know, and it was almost done, actually. It was almost done. So, but I always knew I was going to do a comic one day, but I wasn't ready technically, you know what I mean? I wasn't confident enough in my drawing, and I want to do other things too, you know, like I want to do collage work. I wanted to, you know, I designed furniture for a little bit. I did everything under the sun. It's like I avoided comics for the longest time, right? I was going to get to it, right? You know, it was like that leaky faucet. I'll get to it, right? And then eventually I got to it. And now it's like, you know, I'm just comfortable where I'm at. You know, I'm at that age too, where it's like, I've done enough, you know, other, you know, things in the art world, that I'm satisfied with. So now this is what I want to do. I want to write stories and, you know, see where it goes.
Well, man, I feel like this is where you belong. You bring us, get us. We want more amazing works. That's what I'm going to say. Okay. I got a couple last questions here, but, that ninth grade comic book, are we going to see it ever?
No, absolutely not. My daughter, she's a university. She's like, Dad, this book can never surface. Right. It could never serve. Like, it was grade 9. So this is like in the 80s. Times were different back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we were like, you know, this is during the whole cinematic ninja heyday, the golden years, the Shokusu years. Right. You know what I mean? And then, you know, Big Trouble in Little China. And so it was a book based on basically I had an Asian a superhero group. So it was but I kind of drew it almost like in the veins of the Flintstones, you know. So it wasn't, you know, it's just something that no one's ever gonna see.
Yeah.
No one's ever gonna see. I'm gonna put a little nod to it in one of the Trakovi books, just a slight little nod, and that's it's just going to just die there. Yeah.
Oh man. I want to see this. I want something. I want something. You know. Okay. All right.
I mean, it's pretty good. I was like, what? 13? 14? I mean, you know, it's,
yeah. That's awesome. All right. Maybe I got another question here about somebody that we're going to see. Are we going to see Peter Petrovic in the story? And I butchered his name even.
I will see. Cause like I write every book as I go, because things change, right? The world changes, you know, you change, you know, your lifestyle or things are always changing around you, right? So you try to reflect it, you know, in your work, right? So mm-hmm. I just try to kind of get loose, and then, you know, we'll see.
I love that. I love that. Man, I feel like we can go on and on forever and talk a little bit more about this stuff, which means you'll just have to come back, man.
I would love to. Yeah, no, this is awesome. I really appreciate it.
Oh, awesome, awesome. All right, well, let everybody know where they can find you on social media and all that good stuff.
Okay, so on Instagram, so I have my personal site where you see a lot of process shots. So that's at ThinkItem, which is also on Twitter. And then kind of like the main focus on the Jacoby book is 3 Press Comics. So the number 3 Press Comics. Both on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome, awesome. And make sure you guys keep an eye out for this one. At scale, very soon, it just got picked up. So just give it a little time. It needs a little bit of time to get into your guys' hands and on the shelves. But we are excited it's getting published through a publisher and out there for more people to see. And what a wonderful thing. And man, Adrian, this was a blast. I'm glad to have you here. Thanks for listening to the House of Indie right here exclusively on the Geek Collective and AG Radio Network. Adrian, it was a pleasure, man.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll see you guys next time.